stress-free entertaining lessons. Here's what you'll discover in this video. First, we'll look at the cheats guide to easy entertaining. Then we'll delve into the top five ways to minimize cleanup time and mess, one of my favorite parts. We'll look at seven tips for kitchen confidence. And then we'll also go through my easy quantity calculator so you won't be stressing about either having too much or not enough food. And we'll go through a quick overview of the menus. And lastly, we'll have a quick run through your homework for the class. So the cheats guide to easy entertaining. So I've included suggestions for lazy cooks with each of the menus. So that's really designed to give you specific suggestions and examples of smart ways to cut corners for each of the different menus. Because of course, for every menu, there's different ways that you can take the easy way. So probably the best place to look is, if you're choosing a particular menu, look at that lazy cook's guide. But in this cheats guide to easy entertaining, I just thought I'd go through, because there are some general principles that you can apply to kind of any time you're entertaining to make life as easy as possible. So I thought we'd cover those in this slide here. So the first one is to use your shopping skills and outsource wherever possible. So this is huge. It's easily the biggest opportunity for making your entertaining easy. So the French know a thing or two about outsourcing. A Parisian hostess wouldn't dream of preparing three whole courses from scratch herself. It's just not part of their culture. So she'd put her shopping skills to good use. For example, she'd go to her favorite deli and get a good quality pâté, go to her boulangerie and get a great baguette, and then she's all sorted for her first course. Maybe she'd be getting some great olives or some saucisson, some salami, that sort of thing. And then, she'd probably cook the main course herself, although, I know in France it's really easy to get a great roast chicken to take home, so, she may even do that. But then for dessert, she'd be back to the outsourcing. So that's why in France they have the most amazing patisseries with those beautiful tarts that have, fruit on top, and they're all like really beautiful. That's all because, it's part of their culture that no one really makes dessert at home. I mean, a few people bake, but if you're entertaining, it's more expected that either a guest will bring dessert for you and you'll organize that in advance, or you yourself will go out to your favorite patisserie and find something there. The other option, of course, is to go to the local market and, load up on fresh berries or fruit and get some good quality cream. And that really takes a lot of the pressure out of entertaining if there's only, then the main course that you need to focus on. So second tip is to delegate. So I used to feel compelled to do everything myself and I struggled with delegation. But these days I've discovered the joys of delegating. While the obvious benefit is having less to do yourself, I've found that it also brings everyone together. It's much more inclusive and collaborative when everyone is contributing. So if you're struggling to let go, try little steps at a time. Trust someone to bring wine or dessert, or get someone else to do an appetizer or starter. I've found that I've got lots of friends who aren't into cooking, and I've found that if we're having a big get together, sometimes they enjoy getting a chance to contribute. I've had friends say, "Oh, look, I'll buy the ham, you cook it," and so they'll give me money for the ham kind of thing, or whatever it happens to be, and that's their way of contributing. And I think they really appreciate getting a chance to contribute because they're not really into cooking; they wouldn't normally do that. So. And you having that financial help can be an awesome, awesome help if you're like me and you spend, way more than most people spend, proportion of your income on food. So then our tip number three is to simplify the menu. So it's really easy to get carried away with multiple different courses and lots of sides and all that sort of thing when you have a lot of mouths to feed. But here's where you can really save on time in your planning. So for example, if you're serving, if you're looking at your sides, just serving one big, beautiful salad is much quicker, and also it tends to look better than having, three or four little things that you're putting out. Just simplifying, makes life easier for you, but it also can be more appealing as well. Then tip number four of our cheats guide is to serve family style. So large platters in the middle of the table not only take the pressure off having to find enough space in the kitchen to, you know, line up all your individual plates and serve out, it's way more interactive and it's really fun to share. I really, you know, as much as I can, I like to serve things in the middle of the table when it's just me and my Irishman or when we're having people over. So it also, the other benefit to this is that it means that you know, your guests can load up on the things they love, and if there's something, if they're not so much into asparagus, they can kind of leave the asparagus and they don't have that embarrassing thing of having, you know, this big pile of asparagus on their plate at the end of the meal. Then moving on to tip number five. Let's face it. So the tips for minimizing washing up, which will be coming up in the next slide. So let's face it, the least favorite part of entertaining, even for non-lazy cooks, I think, is washing up or cleaning up. It's really no fun. So we'll delve into my top five ways to minimize mess and clean up time now. So as much as I love having people over and spending hours pottering in the kitchen, I'm not a big fan of cleaning up, especially when you're tired and it's the end of the night, your guests have left you with a bombshell for a kitchen, and all you want to do is just crawl into bed, but then the thought of waking up in the morning to a disgusting house kind of grosses you out even more. So over the years I've developed some ways of minimizing mess and making cleanup time as painless as possible. To be honest, it still isn't, you know, completely smooth and frictionless, but this has made a massive difference. You know, I'm not staying up for 2 or 3 hours after my guests leave and cleaning up, which I did used to do on a regular basis. So our first way is to reuse as you go. So I think this is the biggest potential saver of mess. So every time you need a spoon, if you reach for one that you've already used rather than grabbing a clean one, you know, you're saving yourself, you know, 3, 4, you know, a dozen spoons kind of thing. And the same goes for pots and pans. You know, if you've used a pot to boil some pasta, you know, a quick rinse in the sink, and you know it's ready to use again. You know, if you needed to cook, you know, some potatoes or whatever it happened to be. But that's reusing as you go really is my number one tip here for really minimizing mess. Then second tip here is to serve in the cooking pot. So the whole idea of transferring your creations to a separate platter or serving dish is great, and it can look beautiful if you have an army of servants to clean up after you. But it's not a great if you're the cook and the cleaner. So if your saucepans aren't good looking enough, or your pots aren't good looking enough to serve at the table, really suggest you having a bit of a long term plan to invest in more attractive cookware, so that then you can skip that whole servingware step. So you'll actually, you know, be saving yourself cleaning up time, but you're also saving yourself having extra items in the kitchen as well in the longer term. Tip number three, I love this, go disposable. So if I'm cooking for a big occasion, I always invest in some, you know, those foil trays instead of using my roasting pans. And you know yourself that roasting pans tend to be the things that get really messy and nasty. So just not having them to clean up at the end of the night makes a massive difference. Because, you know, they go straight in the bin, and the double, which is really, you know, makes a big difference. So if there's anything that you can use when you're entertaining that you can, that can be disposable, it's kind of, you know, not great for the environment, but if you're not doing it on a regular basis, it really makes a difference to your cleaning up. Tip number four, then, recycle. So compostable or recyclable plates and cups will certainly save a lot on washing up. These days you can get really funky. I really love them, disposable bamboo plates. They look great and they're lovely to eat off. So I've actually been known to use them for larger dinner parties, and I haven't had, you know, anyone complain, and I think they're actually quite nice to eat off. And then of course at the end of the night they just go into the recycling or into the compost, so you don't even have the, you know, that kind of guilt. And then last but not least, our tip number five is make the most of any chance to clean. So I know this whole clean as you go thing is a pain, but it is a really good habit to get into. It does make a massive difference to the size of the pile of dirty dishes you need to contend with at the end of the night. So it's kind of, for me, the lesser of two evils. Over the years, I've embraced this necessary evil and I'm super grateful for it. These days, I always take the time to stack the dishwasher and get a load on after the main course plates are cleared. Then usually by the time the guests have gone, the dish is like that load's empty, is clean. I can empty that and then fill it up with the remaining things, and kind of cleaning up's done. Oh, and then we have our number six, our bonus idea. So take up any offers that you get to help. So I used to have an automatic, you know, kind of no, I'm okay response to offers to help me clean up. It was just something that was my default position. And a few years ago, I started taking people up on their offers. So if you think someone is genuinely keen to help, let them. Just remember to give them specific directions so their efforts can be as helpful as possible. So, you know, if you want someone to unpack the dishwasher or stack the dishwasher or just put away all the, you know, ingredients that you've finished with, you know, it really can make a difference. And it can be a nice time to bond with that person as well as they're helping you out. So moving on, we've got seven tips for kitchen confidence. So it's one thing to be happy cooking for yourself and your family, but inviting people into your home for a meal can stretch the confidence of even experienced cooks. So here are seven tips to help you become fearless in the kitchen. So the first tip is to acknowledge your fear. So the first step to solving any problem is to admit that there is a problem in the first place. Same goes for fears. It's amazing how something simple as telling it like it is can make our fears seem less scary and overwhelming. And you can apply this to, you know, any parts of your life, not just kitchen confidence, but yeah, that's definitely the first step. The second step is to feel your fears. So take a little time to get to know your fear. Facing up to the fear can bring it back into perspective. At the very least, at least you'll know exactly what you're dealing with. The third tip is to ask yourself, what's the worst that can happen? One of my favorite questions of all time. So what's the worst thing that can happen if you completely burn dinner? It'll be a waste, but you can always dial a pizza or have some cheese and crackers handy. And if your souffle doesn't rise, it will still taste sweet and lovely. Maybe call them berry puddings to manage expectations. But if you kind of go through that worst case scenario first, up front, that can often, you know, make it all seem not so scary when you put it in that perspective. Then tip number four is then just get in there and cook it anyway. So show your fear who's the boss. Invite some friends over, get into the kitchen and just give it a go. It's the only way to learn. You know, the whole action conquers fear. Then tip number five, of course, you know, there are things you can do to set yourself up for success. So preparing ahead as much as possible is big. So there's nothing like having things prepared ahead of time to take the pressure off the cook. Even getting things ready a few hours ahead of time can give you confidence, because you know you'll have time to fix any disasters that do arise before your guests get there. So it takes some planning, but it's worth it when you're confident and relaxed, and you get to ship champagne when your guests arrive. You're not running around the kitchen like a mad person. Tip number six is to take the pressure off yourself. So people are always so appreciative of being cooked for, myself included. There's something really special about home cooking that fulfills needs on so many levels. You know, it's more than just about the pleasure of food. So remove the pressure from yourself to produce a fancy restaurant meal, because trust me, none of your guests are expecting restaurant food, and actually they probably would prefer to eat your home cooking anyway. I mean, you can go out to a restaurant if you want to eat at a restaurant, but eating at someone's home is really, really special. So if you take that pressure off yourself that no one's actually expecting you to be Gordon Ramsay, I think that can make life a lot easier. And then tip number seven is, don't forget Henry's golden rule of stress-free entertaining. So this is all about, you know, you don't want to be a jack of all trades and master of none. So Henry's golden rule is just to focus on doing one thing really well and keep everything else as simple as possible. So in Henry's case, he always cooks, you know, a lovely big piece of beef, usually eye fillet or a ribeye. And yeah, he just does the beef amazingly and everything else kind of falls into place. But you walk away remembering the beef. So it's really quite a powerful thing for confidence as well. Okay, so moving on to our easy quantity calculator. So I know that, you know, for me as well, entertaining, it can be difficult to judge how much food you're going to need because you're not really used to feeding, you know, six or eight people, you know, if your family's only two or three or four. So when I'm entertaining, I focus on getting the right amount of food for the main event and I let the rest fall into place. So I just have this thing, if I know there's enough of the main course to satisfy everyone, I won't have to worry about my guests leaving hungry. And also the main protein tends to be the most expensive part of the meal. So getting that amount just right also helps in the budgeting department. So if you're not going overboard and buying way too much, you know, chicken, beef, whatever your main protein is, it really keeps the rest of the budget on track. So how I do that is I just like for each person, I know I'm going to need one of the following. So the most common, of course, when you're entertaining is to serve some sort of meat, fish, poultry, or tofu, you know, setian. So there I look at one person's going to need somewhere between 200 and 250 grams, which is, you know, 7 to 9 ounces. So of course, if you're feeding, you know, a big, you know, lumberjack or someone who's eats a lot of food, you know, a teenage boy, you might want to up that a little bit, but most people in general, you know, they'll be comfortable with about that amount of protein. Another way to look at it, if you're feeding vegetarians, you know, I kind of think like about one medium eggplant or two mushrooms, you know, field mushrooms or, you know, kind of larger portobello mushrooms is good for one person. Three eggs is good if you're serving eggs. And then for things like if you're serving veggie stuff like cooked lentils, beans, chickpeas or quinoa, look for that I tend to aim for around 125 grams to 150 grams, which is 5 to 7 ounces. And the other option, of course, is if you're serving pasta, per person, look between 100 and 125 grams, which is 3 to 4 ounces. So if I have one of those items for each person, then I know that, you know, we've got the base level covered and the sides and the starters and the dessert can kind of be padding around that. But I know I've I'm on track. So what I want you to do is just to take this as a starting point. So if you're feeding a rugby team, you might like to increase the quantities as a tip, but most people will be satisfied with this range. So then just make sure you have, you know, one or two sides to go with it. And for me, I just see starters or appetizers and dessert as a bonus. So I don't really think about them in my quantity calculations. And if you're still a little bit nervous, this is probably a good thing to do when you're not just getting into entertaining. Try my what I like to call my insurance policy. So what I do is I have plenty of great sourdough bread on hand, you know, all sliced up and ready to serve. So that way I can just have that on the table. So I know that no one's going to leave hungry. And the thing is, if there's heaps of bread left over, that's fine because I can just pop it in the freezer and it's not going to go to waste. And bread tends not to be super expensive as well. So it's not an expensive insurance policy. So that's how we do it. So now we'll go through the class menus, kind of the core and the fun part of the class. So our first menu is inspired by my recent trip to Paris, so a Parisian bistro meal. So for that menu, we're looking at, we've got a pâté and some crusty baguette to start with. And then we move on. I've given you a choice of either serving a classic steak, like in the picture there, or classic roast chook, which are probably the two most popular bistro items, or roast chook, which is also known as roast chicken for people who don't live in Australia. And then we've got some lovely béarnaise sauce, a cheats version of that, which is super simple and really, you know, lovely and decadent. And it's kind of something special that you'd only kind of serve at a dinner party. And then, you know, just a big green salad and some cheap frites or fries, so potato chips that we're actually cooking in the oven to make just the whole managing the cooking load a lot easier. But they're super delicious, and they're, you know, a traditional bistro food. And then we finish with a wonderful simple chocolate mousse. So that's one of my fave menus. Then we have a Thai banquet. So Thai, wonderful cuisine, and great because it's all about sharing. And, you know, Thailand, they love to have lots of different things. So it's a really great thing to do for entertaining. So for the Thai banquet menu, we've got some Thai fish cakes as a little appetizer, a little starter. So just individual, little patties. And then for our banquet, we've got some pad Thai. The picture there is a jungle curry. And there's a stir fry as well. And then serving that with your choice, you could either do both or choose one of cauliflower rice or just regular steamed rice. And then finishing off with, can't remember what the dessert is for the Taiwan, but yeah, just a really simple dessert. Dessert isn't huge in Thailand, so that's kind of an optional thing. Then Friday night pizza. So often, you know, since I live in the country, when we have people to visit, usually they're coming for like the whole weekend, but they tend not to get here till kind of later on Friday night because they would have, you know, left work and then driven to visit us. So Friday night pizza is my kind of go-to thing when we're having guests, you know, kind of for the weekend, because it's awesome. You can get everything ready, you can have your dough made, oven preheated, and then if the guests then just, you know, if they're getting there at whatever time, it doesn't matter. You know, you can just, when they get there, roll out your first pizza and you kind of, you'll have some food on the table within 10 minutes. So love this. And I've got kind of perfected my home pizza oven oven setup. So if you look at that, you'll get kind of get an idea for how to really make like awesome quality pizza with a home oven. So there's a heap of different pizzas in there. The one that's in the picture there in the foreground is my friend Bluey. It's called a Bluey special, but it's really just a pizza with prosciutto and rocket. And then the one in the background is cheese and onion pizza. So yeah, all sorts of yummy, yummy things there. And then just finishing it off with a really, because it tends to be a pretty big meal. And then finishing off with a berry sorbet, which is really quick and easy to make and kind of quite healthy and light as well. So our Moroccan magic menu. So I love Moroccan food. It's one of my favorite cuisines. You know, if I could get asked that terrible question of what's your favorite type of food, I'd probably, Moroccan's definitely up there. There's something quite magical about it, but then there's also something quite familiar as well. So for the Moroccan menu, we're starting out with some dakka, which is like a spice and nut kind of blend, and you serve that with bread, and you dip the bread in olive oil and then dip it into the dakka, and the kind of nuts and spices stick to the olive oil, and it's just really simple but really beautiful. And then for the main course, we're having the picture there. It's a chicken tagine with preserved lemon, which is just great Moroccan ingredient and really magical and beautiful. But also just using lemons and salt. So really a lovely thing. Then we're serving that with some herby cauliflower couscous. And then the dessert to go with is... Oh, that was gingerbread ice cream. So a really, really, really fun one. Something a bit unusual. All about the beef. So there had to be, of course, a big piece of meat menu. So this is, you know, it's pretty hard. Like, if you need to impress people, like, they know you've spent a lot of money if you bought them a nice big piece of eye fillet, like that. So this is a bit of a classic menu. Giving it a bit of a twist, though, serving it with some buttermilk mash, which isn't the twist, but also we were serving it with chimichurri, which is an Argentinian kind of herb sauce that just goes really well with beef, and that with the mash, like such a great meal. And finishing that off with something yummy for dessert. and then our Arabian Nights menu. So this is, we've got two different types of kebabs that you can choose from, or you could choose to do both if you wanted to make your life a bit trickier. So the one in the picture there are kofta, which are made from ground meat, usually ground lamb, but you could use ground beef as well, and then we're serving it on a bed of hummus. Or the other option is just some chicken kebabs, which are, you know, really lovely as well. So now we're on to your homework. So the first step is to invite someone over in the next 4 weeks if you haven't already done so. Someone over to have dinner, of course. So then use a stress-free entertaining class to plan your big event. And then the most important part, I want you to report back in the comments below this video. If you scroll right down to the bottom, you can leave a comment. So what I'm particularly interested in is what I'd love to you guys to share and start getting a bit of discussion is, you know, is there anything that you do differently? How did it go? And are there any dishes that get compliments? You know, what really worked and what, if anything, what didn't work? So I really encourage you to report back, and it'd be great to get some discussion going, with you guys, to see what's working for people and what's not, so we can learn from each other. So what's up next? Oh, there's a surprise bonus. So we've got four 15-minute entertaining menus to go as a bonus. So these are the types of things that I would cook if I'm having just, you know, some friends over. Just, you know, sometimes you just want to have someone over midweek if that's the only time that you guys can catch up, and it's usually casual. Often I've done this and I've only got home like 5 minutes before they've arrived, so you don't have a lot of time to prepare. So I've got four different ideas here for just, you know, really casual, entertaining. So one, I love having a sushi party. So that's just all about, all you need to do there is focus on getting your rice cooked and just getting the ingredients prepared. And then, you know, the meal is actually, everyone makes their own sushi. So it's interactive, it's fun, it's a bit unusual, and which is brilliant because if you're serving, if you've got a mixture of vegetarians and people that, you know, don't eat fish, everyone can make their sushi how they like it. So it's really a nice thing to do. Next one is a big bowl of ramen. So, you know, inspired by Momofuku, wonderful restaurants in New York, and you know, that's all about, you know, a really lovely hearty noodle soup and just doing one thing really well and letting everyone kind of dig in. Then a bit more of a traditional, we've got lamb cutlets with parmesan peas, and you can see in the background there's some hot butter beans as well. And so that's just a really lovely, simple lamb cutlets are always, you know, they're expensive, but they are always tender and really lovely. And, you know, it's something that's a little bit special, but it's also super quick to cook as well. And easily you can get that done in 15 minutes. And then lastly, a comforting ragu. So I don't know many people who don't love to have a nice, you know, rich pasta. So that's a really quick ragu, but using pork sausages, I think, and serving just with a green salad. So it's, you know, it's got the freshness. It's really, you know, a great thing to have. Oh, and so what's next after that? So I just wanted to remind you guys that the class ebook for the class is ready to download. So you may need to right click on it and go save link as, but you should be able to download it and, you know, put it on your iPad or wherever you want to save it. And then you can refer back to it. You won't have to be online to access the content. And that's all. So I really hope you've enjoyed the class. And if you have any suggestions or ideas for future classes, I'd love to hear about them. Just email, either leave a comment under this video or just email me at jules@thestonesoup.com if there's anything that you'd really like me to put on the agenda for next year.